I think the way we've got to do this is we've got to have a grassroots movement. And New Zealand is one of the countries that can survive with the minimum of unpleasantness, collapses completely. It will have huge effects on us. And we can't do anything about it. But what we can do is we can prepare. How are we going to deal with this in New Zealand? And if we have massive climate effects, we can't do anything in New Zealand to stop it. I mean, we can do our share of mitigating what happens with climate change, but the world is warming anyway, so we've got a big thing to stop. So what we can do is we can be prepared.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
In the studio this morning, I have fellow host Lisa Eyre. And Lisa is here with me today because she has started off a Facebook posting around Survival Movement New Zealand. How will New Zealanders approach the coming changes that are here upon us, especially when, in many ways, we've had many years of governments who have not even focused on that, growth being more important than the, shall we say, the deeper futuristic welfare of the planet and of people. So, kia ora, Lisa, how are you?
Kia ora, Tim. I'm very well, thank you.
Lisa, I'm so pleased that we're here together because often we work apart. And we had a wonderful interview 3 weeks ago with Liz Gunn and you, and I got very good feedback from that too.
Oh, good.
We need to be sharp and focused. But your Facebook, Survival Movement of New Zealand, it's only been going a short time. Can you let people know?
Yes, I can. Well, it just happened because I did a Facebook post thinking about what's going to happen in the future, because we all know that climate change is going to affect our lives, our children's lives, our grandchildren's lives. And yet, you know, there's an amazing number of people with their heads in the sand. In fact, the majority of the population of the world must be all with their bottoms sticking up and their heads down, I think. Anyway, because things are happening and we can see major things happening in the climate, and yet who's doing anything about it? But go back to the beginning, the summer of 2018, I noticed that there were signs in a shop that said, owing to the climate, we cannot supply good quality of, and it was various green vegetables, because of flooding. So I thought about it at the time, and I wrote to Parliament, I wrote to the Honourable Damien O'Connor, and I said, I have concerns about our country's ability to provide food in the long term as climate instability increases. Last winter, there were shortages of vegetables and the prices increased because of heavy rain and flooding. This sort of event is not one-off as climate events increase worldwide. Other areas will experience drought. The wisest thing that you can do as government is to initiate and forward plan for some food security for the country. I believe that New Zealand always has 3 months of fuel stored at all times. Perhaps that could be increased to four. But in general, that is good security. If basic foodstuffs were stored, perhaps in government storage facilities built close to supermarket distribution centres, then we could ensure the supermarkets would have stocks of important food, hopefully at all times. Of course, these facilities would require maintenance as the stock would have to be rotated, which is why I suggest working with both Progressive and Foodstuffs.
These are the two major food suppliers for the whole country.
Yes, for example, Foodstuffs is the head office for Pack and Save and New World, as an example. So they could provide the staff to do this, and if one chain isn't interested in doing it, it would give the other chain an advantage, and you could play one chain off against the other if necessary. But what would be considered basic food that is non-perishable in the medium term? I'd assume flour, cereals, rice, pasta, sugar, and other grains would top the list. And baby formula and milk powder could also be included, as Fonterra might not be trusted to supply New Zealand before any lucrative markets. And that's where we might look at laws. I didn't put that in the email. Anyway, I said, I ask you to consider this and perhaps set up a think tank as to how to do this relatively quickly and effectively. I mean, who would have thought the same part of the South Island would be hit by two cyclones in under 3 weeks? If a politician had suggested that as a possibility a year ago, the media would have laughed them out of politics.
Could you tell you over two regions, please?
I think it was Nelson area, I'm pretty sure. I mean, you know, I did write this in February before last. Yeah, so that was when I first had thoughts about it, and unfortunately I haven't heard back from Damien O'Connor about it. And then I suddenly thought, well, look how insecure the world really is. We could have an economic collapse any time, and there's climate change and food security. And that's right, I read an article on insect decline, and it said that if we carry on using all the herbicides and pesticides that we do, there will be no insects in 100 years. And of course, if that happens, we've got a biosphere collapse, there'll be no food, and it'll be the end of the world. So I thought, good grief, 100 years, we haven't really got that long to turn it around. Because, you know, maybe my grandchildren will be alive in that time, but certainly I'll have great-grandchildren there, you know, and I care about my lineage. I care about all people. I care about people. I mean, it's stupid to not do anything and just hope it won't happen.
Well, one of the challenges that I'm finding, Lisa, is that there's not one world leader, particularly in the large countries, who are standing up for the future of children at all.
Yes.
None of them are saying anything. And you'll notice none of them will mention the word biosphere, ecology, environment, or our planet as a whole. They're not talking whole systems.
Well, you know, Greta Thunberg, who started the children's movement about climate change, she did a speech in Berlin very recently, and she called it a strange world. She said, we live in a strange world, where all the United Science tells us that we're about 11 years away from setting off an irreversible chain reaction way beyond human control that will probably be the end of civilization as we know it. We live in a strange world where children must sacrifice their own education in order to protest against the destruction of their future. Where the people who have contributed the least to this crisis are the ones who are going to be affected the most. Where politicians say it's too expensive to save the world while spending trillions of euros subsidizing fossil fuels. We live in a strange world where no one dares to look beyond our current political systems, even though it's clear that the answers we seek will not be found within the politics of today. Where some people seem to be more concerned about the presence of school for some children than the future of mankind. Where everyone can choose their own reality and buy their own truth. Where our survival is depending on a small, rapidly disappearing carbon budget and hardly anyone even knows it exists. We live in a strange world where we think we can buy or build our way out of a crisis that's been created by buying and building things. Where a football game or a film gala gets more media attention than the biggest crisis humanity has ever faced. And she went on, but that's just what a young girl who started this movement. And the movement, of course, was not very well, the protests were not very well reported in New Zealand, because, of course, it was the day of the Christchurch massacre, and so we didn't hear much about it. But I was in Melbourne at the time, and I saw children, even primary school children, coming back from the march with signs. So there's some concern there. But well, is it being listened to?
Well, $1 trillion plus has been spent on arms. This is astonishing. We all share the same breath, but we're still prepared to spend over $1 trillion every year. I mean, it's beyond strange. It's mad.
The only way that we could actually survive, actually all as humans work together, I hate to say this, is some little green men from outer space come and invade the Earth, and then it won't matter what religion, what race we are, humans all unite and fight against the little green men. I mean, it's such a pathetic consciousness. Surely, surely women in particular, and I'm calling all women to wake up, to protest, to say, we don't want our sons going to war. We don't want our sons making things for the war machine. We just don't want this. This killing is a waste of time. And Trump is using 62 cents in the dollar for arms in the US if out of tax, 62 cents.
I'm not too sure. There's so many different stories coming from Donald Trump. One, he doesn't want war with Russia, but the machine in America wants more money spent on armaments.
Well, any POTUS, really, in the US is has sold out and trapped by the industrial military machine. So we've got a really crazy world. So I think the way we've got to do this is we've got to have a grassroots movement. And New Zealand is one of the countries that can survive with the minimum of unpleasantness if we start doing something now.
Okay, can you put some bullet points up for people so that we can start looking at what needs to be done? I think the most important thing is education, making people aware.
Well, yes. I mean, we can't stop an economic collapse. If the US dollar collapses completely, it will have huge effects on us, and we can't do anything about it. But what we can do is we can prepare. How are we going to deal with this in New Zealand? And if we have massive climate effects, we can't do anything in New Zealand to stop it. I mean, we can do our share of mitigating what happens with climate change, but the world is warming anyway, so we've got a big thing to stop. So what we can do is we can be prepared.
Okay, a few things. How do we get people organised? Now, with Green Planet FM, I've interviewed spokespeople for various towns and communities in New Zealand, like Whangarei. I've interviewed people in the Coromandel and in Golden Bay, in Nelson, also in Lyttelton, and I'm in negotiation with people in Raglan, because these are little microcosms of people who are working for the benefit of the community. And we also have transition towns. Now, I went up and had a look at transitiontowns.org.nz, and they still have a presence, including Facebook, throughout New Zealand as well. So transition towns are one group of people who we can touch base with, because they're actually doing it quietly. They don't have the impetus that they had prior to the financial crisis of 2007 to 2008, but they are still very relevant today. They were led to believe that peak oil was here and that there was going to be less oil. However, that was all lies. And what happened was there was more fuel thrown onto the market, and they thought the fuel prices were going to go up hugely because we're going to have a shortage of oil. Well, strangely enough, we don't seem to be having this shortage of oil, and that sort of pulled the rug out from transition towns under the base of it. Now, transition towns are one group of people, but there are isolated communities outside Auckland and Wellington and Christchurch who are still diligently working on community affairs based around farmers' markets, based around cooperating. Can you?
Well, I think transition towns is fantastic, and I had noticed that they'd gone quiet, but I don't think that they've got the solutions to how to manage with a big city. Well, last year we had a big storm, and I had no power for 4 days, and so experienced what it's like living with no power, and it's really different. I went out and bought myself a barbecue because I didn't have one, and we cooked everything on the barbecue. So we were fine. I'm all right, Jack. And I have a small swimming pool, so it's quite possible to stay clean, you know?
And not thirsty if the worst comes to the worst.
Oh, well, it's a salty, actually. But but anyway, there's a lot of I'm all right, Jack sort of stuff out there. Like, oh, well, I'm going to move to the country and I'm going to be self-sufficient, or some people already are. But do you know, if the shit really hits the fan, somebody will come with a gun and take all your vegetables anyway. So what we've got to do is we've got to have something that's really resilient. And we need to look at transport. We need to look at electricity. We've got to be able to provide food. We've got to be able to get food all around the countryside. And I think that that has to be done at both local government level and the government. So possibly contacting local governments and raising concerns might be the best way to go ahead, because they then have influence from that. And the government is kind of busy with Christchurch, as I said before.
Yes. Okay. Well, in 2017, 82% of New Zealand's electrical needs were generated by renewables. 82%. So I think that's really, really good. And so Helen Clark in 2007, when she was the Prime Minister, had a national target of 90% renewable electricity by 2025, with wind energy to make up much of the increase. So that's a good thing. So we'll have electricity essentially for homes. We may have to take out one lamp post throughout the country at night to save power there.
Yes, but I mean, if you have a huge storm, Category 5 hurricane comes through Auckland, you won't have any power at all for a good long time. And that causes food spoilage in supermarkets if they can't get the fuel to run generators and all of those sorts of things.
Okay, I agree with you there. Mm. New Zealand's still a producer of oil and gas, and so that we most probably have every truck and bus able to still stay on the roads in New Zealand, not necessarily cars.
Well, we had carless days back in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yes.
And those sorts of things can be done if they are kind of like prepared for. If we suddenly are prepared to do that quickly because there's a shortage, that can be done. But I just feel like there's no preparation.
That's it.
And this is the key. Yeah. We've got to prepare. It's no good waiting till it happens. And Pittsburgh, as a city in the US, is preparing for it. And Auckland Council has on the website, you can leave suggestions there. And I think that we should actually in Auckland port that, I fully intend to go through and say, well, this is what we should be doing in Auckland. But some things that do need to happen through central government as well.
Yes, it's the preparation and the thinking of it. In Parliament at the moment, in particular, they're not focused on how we can work within the country to prepare for these changes. When we got these huge loans after the 2008 crisis, we went into $60 billion worth of loans to be able to cover the needs of the country. But the Prime Minister of the time did not say, we're going to have to pay these loans back. And so we had these monies to cushion everything, and now we're just carrying on comfortably numb.
Definitely. Well, the first thing that you'd have to do financially is what social credit, the political party social credit says, is we must have the Reserve Bank create money so that we're not borrowing money from private banks, because then the Reserve Bank can choose if we pay interest on it or not.
It's a wonderful idea, Lisa. However, because we're so intermeshed with the global financial system, the big boys overseas will definitely put pressure to bear on New Zealand, would they not?
Well, I mean, that's what Gaddafi did, and look what they did to Gaddafi.
Correct.
So, but New Zealand might get away with it. I mean, we're a small country with us. I mean, Gaddafi was trying to do it for the whole of Africa.
A gold dinar.
Yes. So I don't think we'd have an invasion. But you see, if there are crises, this is the thing, we'd get away with it, because
yes,
that's the difference. We've got a crisis, and if there's a world crisis, they won't put pressure on us in those situations at all.
Definitely. They'll be under a huge strain themselves.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's good. Again, so it's all around the preparation, because I just want to throw in here, in 2014... almost 6,700 billion cubic feet of gas came from New Zealand gas fields. That's a huge amount. And also, for oil, there was 450 million barrels of oil have been produced in New Zealand since 2014. And there's about 159 litres per barrel. And
that's very good, barrel. But are they all processed at Marsden Point?
No, because we're selling it offshore. Well, a good percentage of it, light sweet, they call it.
Uh-huh.
There's coals to Newcastle.
Yes.
There's a crazy thing that's going on here. Yeah, people got to know that around 85% of all the country's jet fuel is done there. That's at Marsden Point. 67% of our diesel, around 58% of all petrol, and all fuel oil for ships. So I'm bringing this information out, Lisa, so that other people can say, okay, we're quite resilient from that standpoint, but we have to educate the politicians and the leaders in this country to start preparing ourselves for the future.
Yes, because, I mean, they do have 3 months stored here of petrol stored.
Yes.
But they've got no food stored. So they've got all this petrol so you can get around the place, but there's no food that they'll be taking around. So that's a bit crazy. And I think wheat is one of the main things that there's a huge problem with, because all our wheat is grown and processed in Australia, except for a little bit. And what New Zealand grows is called biscuit wheat. Because normal wheat, I think, doesn't grow terribly well here. So this biscuit wheat would be fine, but we wouldn't have a lot of normal bread. And that's a difficulty. We'd have to have more rice. And most of our rice, I think, is all of our rice, really, is grown overseas. So that requires importing. So a really big Achilles heel here. And I think it needs to be seriously addressed. I watched a series on TV about 25 years ago called Survivor. And most people had died from some very infectious disease, but some were left. And after initially having to loot supermarkets, then there was no food left. So they moved out into the country, and it was how they survived. And everybody basically was an enemy, because you didn't know if they were going to come along and take everything that you had. It was very dark, very, very dark. And we need to realise that humans will fight for themselves and their families to the death if there's a shortage.
You see, I've specifically been to a farmer's market in Gisborne and also in Whangarei. And I really, really like the ideas of farmer's markets. And I've seen people pack around the farmer's market, and there's all sorts of things, from holistic health, organic food, permaculture, homeschooling and cooperatives, even men's sheds extending from that, women's cooperative sewing groups, and homeschooling, plus time banks and green dollars, and even garage sales. So, I mean, Project Littleton, I hold up as a very good example of 700 people directly involved, and it's about 2,000 people loosely affiliated to Project Littleton, where they are always communicating one way or another to this particular localised cooperative. And they've got their own organic gardens as well, which comes back to here in Auckland. I've just been in touch with Richard Main, and he runs Gardens for Health here in South Auckland. And there are over 100 community gardens in the Auckland area, and 75 of them are based around Gardens for Health, which the Manukau District Health Board are directly involved. These gardens, I mean, to have 100 community gardens over Auckland, how many people know about that? And so what it is allowing people to come together, and these are like little nucleuses or little cells throughout the whole city, to give people an idea that you can come and you can cooperate. And then whatever you get from the gardening exercise, you can always take seeds home and grow them in your own patio or in your own section if you're living in the inner city. So it gets people aware to start growing on their back doorstep.
That is very good, but it still doesn't address the fact that you can have babies that are bottle fed, that will need formula, things like that, that many people with different needs, medical needs, all sorts of things. If the system collapses, well, we have to have something in place to stop the system collapsing. But I totally agree. Singapore has got some nice buildings where they've grown things all over the outsides of the buildings. So you can have a garden, but not being a great gardener myself.
I am.
Well, a busy
gardener, not necessarily great, but I'm enthusiastic.
One year I can have hundreds of tomatoes and the next year about three. So I don't know what causes that. And my garden has got kauri trees in it and they shade the soil. So I don't get much in the way of a garden
sunlight,
out the back.
Yes.
No sunlight. So we've all got different situations. And, I mean, what about old people's homes? How are they going to survive sudden? Here I'm talking about sudden things, because you could have, as well as a huge storm, flooding, winds and all of that, as well as those, you've got this economic collapse. And so we really do have to prepare and be resilient and have a strong leadership that can take over, as well as doing things personally ourselves. But I think just growing our own vegetables, not encouraging plastic use, planting the occasional tree, it's not enough.
Well, you see, I would like to see a plan, and even though a lot of people might not like it, plans for how we take over the parks and the golf courses, albeit the golf courses, particularly the greens, are poisonous, but a lot of the fairway and heaps of the rough are able to be dug up very quickly and put into gardens. And if we have a look at the parks across New Zealand, and particularly parks in the city, we can really focus on it. And one of the big things you have to really put your attention on, what is the fastest growing vegetable? Well, the fastest one really is radishes. You can't live on radishes. However, with rice, if you've got plenty of rice or you've got plenty of other flour products coming in, you can start to supplement the veggies. Now, I know that when I can walk from a garden back to the house sometimes where I have my garden, I can pick up plantain leaf, dandelion leaf, I have puha, I can all add this into the rice, and all you have to do is be savvy in making a nice sauce or a nice dressing. I have honey mustard, and I can do all sorts of little magical things with sauces to make the food tasty, because that's what we have to also be able to.
Well, will those honey mustard sauces be available? That's the thing.
Well,
and try feeding an uncooperative two-year-old. I mean, there's a lot of situations that we have to cover for.
I agree. However, I maintain we've just got to get savvy. And so we're using this program, Lisa, to get your really wonderful idea out for people to go up on Facebook, Survival Movement New Zealand, and start to participate.
Survival Movement NZ. Yeah, because come and suggest things. Because what I'd like to do is to actually centralise some sort of way to approach local councils. And I do think that in the cities we are far more vulnerable than the people in the country at the moment. But the country people will have a problem if people from the cities start coming out to them. So we want to avoid violence. We want to avoid stealing. We want to have a situation where everybody is okay.
I agree. Now, this is the one that I really like because it's got so many possibilities, and it's living economies, and it's about time banks and also about green dollars, and also they have even financial pools where you can come together and put money into a cooperative pool which you can lend out among yourselves. Helen Dew down in Carterton, I went and stayed with her last year because she is standing out, well out in front, with this idea of having us work together. Now, anybody can go up on livingeconomies.newzealand, and there is a blueprint for you to be able to get a computer program to put in place a time bank. And Project Littleton has got a superb time bank. They have nearly 1,000 people involved with that.
Yes, Project Littleton was extremely good when they had the Christchurch earthquake. And Littleton really, you know, survived much better than the rest of Christchurch. So that was fantastic. Living Economies also sell books, and they sell books about all these sorts of situations. So there are really good ideas out there which individuals are doing and involved in. But there's so many other people that aren't. And this is where we do need central government and local government's assistance.
I agree. I have interviewed the librarian from Project Littleton because they have the books there as well. But the other thing about Project Littleton is that the civil defence here in New Zealand maintain that Project Littleton is near the perfect blueprint for all other towns and villages and even suburban areas to use in the case of having a telephone tree, having these connections, so that in the case of a civil emergency or if in the case of earthquake or whatever, you already know your friends and your contacts in your local area. And that's when you can fire up, because Project Littleton got an award and the Prime Minister went down to see them as a group because they were so impressed. The New Zealand Police, the New Zealand Fire Brigade, the Ambulance Service, the New Zealand Navy all sent letters of thank you honouring the people of Project Littleton, because when the Christchurch disaster happened with the earthquake, they jumped into action and they were very cohesive. Lives were saved and all sorts of wonderful events happened as a result. They've been a very strong, holistic, self-organising, self-reliant group of individuals.
Oh, they're fantastic. I think you probably interviewed Margaret Jeffries on Green Planet before, have you?
I've interviewed her twice.
Yes, she's the person who founded Project Littleton. Another group that's going to be quite useful is Neighbourly. If you
yes.
haven't joined up to Neighbourly, that will help. But what we've got to realise in all of these situations is if there is no food, these organisations are still vulnerable because it isn't easy for individual people to grow enough food for the entire country. I mean, we've got 5 million people here, and we're only talking about what good things happening around, you know, in thousands. But we've got to feed millions. So maybe there should be some possibility for the government to put a law very quickly into place that will ensure that farmers are supplying the country. Perhaps every farmer should be required to have a certain number of acres growing cabbages or something.
You'd get pushback from that.
You would probably, but the thing is, it doesn't have to come in law straight away, but if farmers knew that if there was a crisis, that this is what they'd have to do, that could be okay.
Well, there may be some, if you're a meat eater, they may have a couple of cows or a couple of sheep that they could then start to share with the community.
But not just the community, getting it to Auckland, Wellington, the big cities.
Yes.
Is really, this is what concerns me the most. I'm thinking that the countryside would probably be reasonably okay. It's the cities that we've got to look after. And certainly Project Littleton's way of doing things it would be good. But we don't want martial law, for example.
I agree.
Yeah. We want something much more gentle.
Right. Well, there was a TV advertisement that stated that we had to have 3 days' worth of water, 3 days' worth of food, and torches and a little radio that went. Now, we haven't heard that advertising campaign for a wee while.
We haven't, but I have all that. I have actually probably 3 weeks' worth.
That's right. Mm. So here's the first thing, possibly, Lisa, we need to remind the government, the media, to allow people, or to get people ready, to start just storing 3 days of everything. Because in 3 days, then the government would then jump in and take over all the radio stations and all the TV stations, or the main ones, and say, OK, this is what we need to do, whatever the situation may be. So we've got 3 days, really, to start taking care of ourselves from our own resources. I'm speaking with Lisa Eyre on her Facebook page, Survival Movement NZ. Facebook, Survival Movement NZ. I have seen TV in the States showing when a hurricane hits Florida, you see all the shelves in the supermarket get totally cleaned out very, very quickly. And so we need to be able to plan ahead and get this all sorted.
We have to be realistic. There's a lot of people who are living hand-to-mouth in this country who cannot possibly afford to have 3 days of food sitting on the shelf. Really, fact, I'm afraid. Yeah. So Auckland Council is asking for ideas, and if you look for Auckland's Climate Action Plan is what it's called, and it's on Auckland Council's web pages, and I think that might be quite helpful if we really point out just how important it will be to get food around the city, because we can't just leave it to private organisations. This is the thing.
Well, I'm positive that the government most probably would commandeer certain carrying companies and say, right, we want you to be able to do this, we want you to be able to get from this point to that point, be it a supermarket or whatever.
Mm. And this is where the government needs to plan. This is where the government needs to have plans ahead of time to say, if this situation arises, we will do this. And even notify carrying companies, for example, or supermarkets or whatever, whatever their plan is. But what I'm really requesting is that people insist, local governments and governments, start thinking about this.
I agree. And the good thing is we could have a website, a big national website, and you just click on whatever city you live on and a map of a city would come up, and then down the side it would say, these are the areas where they dispense the food or the drink or whatever, and it could be easily done if somebody's got the vision Lisa, to set it in place with government, local government.
Well, yes, it could be. And I think it would be really wonderful if somebody came forward and said, let's do this. And a group of people got together. I mean, it could be an offshoot of Transition Towns. But it is really important. And the other thing is, you know, that triggered this whole thing was the possibility of insect collapse. Because, there again, if the insect population collapses, there will be no food. And I read an article in The Guardian, and there have been other ones since, that said we've got about 100 years before insects collapse. So you won't be growing your own food in your backyard if insects collapse. Not really. So what we need to do is to stop using the pesticides and herbicides in this country that are causing this, because the monarch butterflies are showing us, the bees are showing us, there's many insects showing us that they're dying out slowly. And when you drive on an open road at night, years ago, older people like me will remember that your windscreen would get covered with moths and various other insects that would have come to the light and get smashed on the windscreen. When you turned the lights on at night, particularly for me living in the Waitakere's, you'd turn on the lights at night, and if you didn't draw the curtains, the windows would be completely covered with insects. And now you're lucky if you see one moth.
Not only that, you go through the country during the day in the rural sector. 40 years ago, I know, you had to go out and you had grasshoppers. There was all sorts of different insects on the windscreen, and sadly, you know, bees would have been a few of them as well. And so I agree. So you're saying clean out the sprays and make New Zealand far more organic. Or first, let's transition to regenerative and biological agriculture, and then slowly work into becoming more organic.
Well, exactly. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous to actually even be continuing using some of these pesticides and herbicides when we know that this is what's going to happen. And I think in France, they've actually stopped the use of glyphosate for a start.
That's right.
A Roundup.
Yes. Monsanto, I'll throw that in, even if Bayer is now reaping the karma of Monsanto, which is how it works. Yes.
Yes. We still have contractors to Auckland Council going around, I think a Treescape, I know, is one of them, going around and spraying glyphosate all over the roadside and in parks and everywhere else like that. Now, just think, there'd be more jobs if people were actually going and pulling them out. But they can do this sort of thing with hot water as well, but it needs to do a bit more often. So they want to save money. Now, everything that isn't quite right, really, everything is about money. But we've got people that need jobs. There's people that could have jobs if it meant that we had to employ a few more people. Just imagine, we could pay the CEO and his cronies of Auckland Council a lot less, and actually have a few more people doing things well. So there's a lot of things that are not right that need fixing up.
I agree. I could go, if they did too, we all take a 10% cut in pay.
Well, I don't know about all. Some people really can't.
No, okay. Up to, say, $45,000 or $50,000, everybody above take a 10% cut.
Yes.
Because the people at the top, they've got so much money, it's just slush funds for them. So they would lose, you know, $15,000 in a year. Well, that money could go to something else that will benefit.
That's right. I mean, why should my rates go to somebody's exorbitant salary? But look, we're getting slightly off topic here. But the point is, we shouldn't be risking the biosphere and this insect collapse, because as a council here, and probably Wellington is the same, that, you know, we're using the cheap, easy way by using nasty chemicals.
See, in January 2016, the state of Sikkim in India, right up by the Himalayas, they became the first fully organic state and probably the world. Where is clean, green New Zealand in this story, Lisa?
Well, clean, green New Zealand has not been clean and green as long as I've lived here, and I came in 1967. And what we noticed coming from England was, where are the flowers? Surely if they brought grass seed in here, and they managed to have boxthorn hedges in Taranaki, I don't know about elsewhere.
And Barbary hedges in Matamata?
Yes.
On the Barbary coast?
Yes, so they managed to have all those things, but not a, a wildflower to be seen.
In New Zealand, there wasn't much in the way of wildflowers. Now, we must be really understanding of that. Now, we've got heaps of gorse. Heaps of gorse. Gorse is everywhere. And so there's a benefit of gorse. At least it pulls down nitrogen into the soil. But you can't pass through a gorse paddock if it's 3 metres high. It's impossible.
Well, only the goats will eat it anyway. But it just looked like everything had been sprayed. We just felt everything had been sprayed, that there wasn't the nature here that there should be. There definitely in certain places, but around the farms and that, I think. And wasn't it DDT that they used to spray or something terrible?
245T we used to have on our farm. Mm. Being a farmer's son, I saw a lot of fairly hideous practices until Monsanto refined it to such a degree that it was deadly. But, yeah, so getting back to New Zealand becoming clean, green, and looking at the organics of this, we've got to make that gain. It's the education of a political process.
I think farmers and Fonterra have a lot of power in this country, and they are actually the key to making this all work. But also we have individual people using chemicals in their gardens, and I was horrified to see in my local supermarket that what I'd never seen before was a container of Roundup there on the shelf. So I've got to go and see the owner and say, what are you doing?
I have seen many, many people with small sprays out in their garden spraying barefoot or in jandals or thongs.
Yes.
And they're spraying.
Yes.
So,
and then you wonder why the cancer levels are what they are, because, of course, Monsanto has just lost an $80 million claim to a man who said he got Hodgkin's lymphoma from spraying Roundup.
Yes.
And, yeah, they've had to pay all that money, which is not much use to the poor guy because he's dying. But the fact is that the judge has looked at it all and Monsanto was found wanting.
Yes. So, Lisa, thank you for that. Now, the strategy, the big strategy of how we get people involved and start to make a difference.
Well, I mean, first, how has France managed to ban? It's just legal, it's law, it's the government.
The French are on top of a number of things at the moment, and the yellow vests are still shaking the establishment, because the French also didn't want supermarkets to throw a lot of food away, and they brought in laws to stop supermarkets just dumping food as soon as it hit the due date, when in actual fact there were days or maybe weeks when that food could still be used. And they've also got a law that stops the planned obsolescence of certain things like hair dryers and toasters and hot kettles and jugs. So they are more involved than we are in complacent Kiwi land.
Well, in the UK, you can. There's a place you can just go along and drop off your hair dryers and small appliances when they break down, and there's places you can recycle batteries. I mean, we've got none of that going on here. But I don't think that's quite what's going to help us survive. This survival movement, NZ's about really making sure everybody has enough food, can manage at all times. Because Venezuela is pretty bad, but this will be worse. Do you know, Tim, I almost feel I should write what my original post was on Facebook for survival. I should read it, I think.
Okay, go.
How will mankind survive the next few decades if no changes are made to our lifestyles? Here are the issues. Insect collapse, causing a collapse of the ecosystem. Climate change. Economic collapse. Increased warfare. And overall deforestation and pollution running amok. This is serious stuff, and the main problem that will hit first is hunger, food shortage. Without the pollinators, there will be no crops. With floods and droughts, there will be no crops. With economic collapse, people will have no money to buy food. It is indeed the sixth mass extinction, and it's coming faster than you think. What can you do? Pressure the politicians. Do not let up. New Zealand is one place that could survive if the proper steps are put in place. There's plenty of water if it can be transported. There need not be insect collapse if the worst pesticides and herbicides are banned, like neonicotinoids. Methods of transport need to be ensured that don't use oil, fossil fuels, if the economy collapses, because there might be no more petrol. Food production must become local and varied. Reliance on imported food must stop. We can do this in New Zealand if we start now. We need a survival movement that will promote a long-term plan. Get the media involved, Call in high-profile people to help with planning. If you think Venezuela is bad, you ain't seen nothing yet. And maybe my children and grandchildren will see more than I will, but I care just as much as if it was my own future. We must help our youth and create a good future for them and their progeny. After all, we inherited the earth, and we have wrecked it for our grandchildren. Planting a tree and not using plastic is great, but there's a lot more to do than that. So that was my original post, and then the interest in that caused me to put up the Survival Movement NZ page on Facebook.
We've got to be conscious of all our actions, Lisa. We're not supposed to be walking consumer bodies or walking desire bodies. There is more to life, and I see the sacred in the fact that our planet lends us a body, lends us free air, free rainwater, and until recently, a free food chain. What do we do in reciprocity?
Well, we tend the earth. Isn't that the native, the indigenous way of looking at things, is that we are here to tend the earth, and the earth gives back.
Correct.
But what we're doing is we're taking.
We're extracting. Mm. And this is very important. It's the connection that we need, Lisa. I can't quite understand. See, Maori had this wonderful connection through whakapapa, that their navel, their belly button, their umbilical cord connected to their mother and to her mother and to her grandmother and the great-grandmother all the way back through the family tree. And the Maori mums used to hold their babies and sing the whakapapa of a lineage to their children. And so by that time that child was 4 years of age, they could sing this wonderful song of where they came from, via the particular canoe or waka they came from. And my main one is Ngāti Kahanunu Te Wairua. And so I come from the Takitimu canoe. And so just at that particular lineage of my 1/16th of Māori, I have a connection that is deep. And we need to realize that, there's an old saying, we come from the earth, and our physical body goes back to the earth, but the essence of the flower, that's another story. Where does that go?
Well, indeed, Tim. And, you know, we don't need a lot of material things to live. Survival Movement NZ isn't about the material. It isn't about, I mean, a few people have posted about 5G, and 5G is most certainly a concern and a consideration.
I agree.
Of course, that to some degree we've got to stop happening, and there have been a number of interviews on Green Planet FM about 5G, but I think in this sort of situation that will probably collapse anyway. The main thing is that we can have food, we can be able to have community,
cooperation,
so that we've all got people who care, somebody knocking on the next door neighbour, checking that they're okay. I mean, when I did my 3 weeks of food that I've got in the house, I thought, well, how am I going to do this if I don't include my neighbours?
So you've got 3 weeks. I've only got, well, not quite so much as that.
Yes. Oh, well, you know, I'm a Taurus. I like my food. So, yes, but it wouldn't be 3 weeks if I included my neighbours, you see.
Yes, well, collaboration, cooperation, random acts of kindness and paying it forward are all part of us working together for the benefit of the localized whole and extending out from there.
Definitely, definitely. So it's just really about thinking ahead. And I think anyone who has concern for the future has concern as to what our lifestyle has done to the planet to create this, and what people have done. I mean, this whole financial situation and the economic collapse, we've just watched it happen. We haven't done anything, but we've watched it. And it's probably not possible to do anything much now other than put a different system in place. And here, the Awareness Party, which I started, and which is too hard to get off the ground at the moment, so I've moved to social credit, and we're talking about this.
That's right. And you did an interview with Chris Leach of Social Credit, and you can track that on greenplanetfm.com.
Because it's very good. Yes. He does very well. So anyway, all of these things, if we could just plan for the future, then we'll be okay in New Zealand. I really can't say what's going to happen to the rest of the world. And I don't want to be a Chicken Little, say the sky's falling in. I'm going to say, hey, what are we going to do before the sky falls in?
Well, we plan for the future on so many levels. What we do is we put a car seat belt on, because we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Yes.
So that's a very simple thing. People take out insurances to cover themselves in the case of a loss. They're planning for the future. And when it's all said and done, you put in roads, you put in hospitals, etc., because you plan for the future. So all we have to do is take this to another level of being really mindful of what could happen if New Zealand was caught up, particularly in a global situation where that we do have a perturbation in the economic sphere that impinges on New Zealand, where we have to fall on our own devices and our own localised communities to get through. And I think that was that TV ad that the government put out, was get through, wasn't it? It was 3 days of supplies.
Well, get through is great. What we're facing isn't just getting through a few days.
That's right.
We're facing how to manage for the rest of our lives or the rest of our children's lives, and it's much bigger than get through for 3 days.
Well, I'm trusting that this is going to be short because there's going to be a shift of consciousness at the same time. I think usually when you have a crisis, the crisis can be the evolutionary driver to force us to a higher level of knowing and being.
Absolutely.
And so this is where I really want us to focus, Lisa, so that we can, at the same time, take care of what we need to do in the interim to finally get back to living as a human and a human being. The global family has to come together and has to awaken. And at heart, isn't that what we're all here to do, is to grow into the light of our own true selves?
Absolutely. But unless we could all become breatharians very quickly, we have to look at the practical aspects too.
I definitely agree. So everybody, please check out and go up on Survival Movement NZ on Facebook. Become involved. Share a bit of yourself. Make the effort, because we do, and we've been doing it all our life, haven't we, Lisa?
We have indeed.
Oh, Lisa, well, look, fantastic. Thank you very much for wanting to ignite the spark to allow New Zealanders to realise that we can do it together.
Yes, the only way we can do it is together.
Correct.
Thanks, Tim.
Team New Zealand.
Thank you, Tim.
Kia kaha and aroha, two very important statements via the Māori language. Stand strong and love.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. I want that clapping in there. That was Lisa Eyre on Survival Movement NZ on Facebook. Survival Movement NZ Facebook. I wish to finish this interview with a song by Val Wright that's got into the world finals of the Peace Song Competition. It's a delightful song and it's so encompassing. We need this uplifting sound at the moment. And voting is done by Facebook. And we've only got a few more days to go, so please support Val and vote for the song. And you're encouraged to go to a link at the bottom of Val's interview on greenplanetfm.com. If you go there, see Val Wright, you can vote. Go to the bottom of the page and vote Peace to the World.
Imagine there is heaven above that we call universal love, and there is nothing here that divides us. All people living in peace this way, our children free to laugh and play, in peace and light a joyous hallelujah. A joyous hallelujah. Feel the magic of love we share, the sun, the moon, and stars out there, and our galactic family reunited. Love is the key to open our heart with gratitude. a major part, combining our love in a gracious hallelujah. Hallelujah. A place to be where all the world has been set free. Hearts and souls have come to be united. With water pure and crystal clear, and food for all from earth so dear, together we sing a heartfelt hallelujah.
Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the Spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies, but of 7.6 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Mueller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch
and Lisa Eyre
and Liz Gunn.
in the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say Kia kaha and haere rā.